It's time for a more in-depth look at today's news. It's time to find out who's pulling the strings. It's time for the Behind the Curtain podcast with your host, author Jeff Reynolds.
Hi, I'm author Jeff Reynolds, and this is episode 22 of the Behind the Curtain podcast. Before we begin, I want to remind you to check out my new website, www.jeffreyreynolds.net. Spell my name right, that's J-E-F-F-E-R-Y. This is where you'll find all of my content from all the different platforms where my articles can be read. Also, I want to ask you a favor. When you go to jeffreyreynolds.net, please sign up for my newsletter. I won't spam you, and I'll only send out a couple of emails a month, tops. This allows me to keep you updated on all of the cool new stuff I'm doing in 2020. I made it really easy, too. Just go to the website and click the link at the top that says subscribe to the newsletter. My first interview this week is with Lorraine Woodward. Lorraine represents the Immigration Reform Law Institute and Attorneys United for a Secure America. Lorraine was in town to address Oregonians for immigration reform and sat down to talk to me about all the problems associated with illegal immigration. We discussed how illegal aliens often get treated better in America than citizens, the security problems associated with illegal immigration, and the need to secure our borders. She's also recruiting immigration law attorneys to join their early team. You can find more information at early.org, that's IRLI.org, and AUSAmerica.org. The second interview this week is with the group of folks who brought you Slavic Vote, one of the largest voter registration movements the Pacific Northwest has ever seen. I talked to Dimitri, Andre, and Lily about what brought them together, how the elders in the churches initially held out before jumping on board, and how they're changing the electorate by fighting for family values and smaller government in the Russian and Slavic communities here in the Pacific Northwest. They've also started their own new podcast at anchor.fm/Slavic Vote. You can find more information and links to their social media accounts at www.slavicvote.org. Don't forget to subscribe to the Behind the Curtain podcast wherever you listen to it, and please leave a positive rating. The more subscribers and the better ratings, the higher Behind the Curtain will rank on podcast services like Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts, among many others. Stick around to the very end so you can hear the full version of I Am America, the theme song, by my buddy Brian Futch. Hey, did you know that I wrote a book? It's called Behind the Curtain, Inside the Network of Progressive Billionaires and Their Campaign to Undermine Democracy. It's an examination of the dark money on the left that continues to fuel the worst of the swamp creatures in Washington, D.C. There's a real appetite out there for folks to learn about who's pulling the strings on the left and what their ultimate goals are. I've done several speaking engagements over the past several months, and I'm looking forward to more. If you know of any conservative clubs, Republican groups, Tea Party, or 912 clubs, or anyone else who would get something out of following the dark money on the left, please email me at jeff@jeffreyreynolds.net. Search for Behind the Curtain, Inside the Network of Progressive Billionaires and Their Campaign to Undermine Democracy in stores or online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Simon & Schuster. It's available in hardback, Kindle, or Nook now. Check out whoownsthedems.com for more information. Okay, welcome back into the Behind the Curtain podcast with Jeff Reynolds. I'm your host, Jeff Reynolds, and I am here in Portland International Airport in the bowels somewhere, waiting for a flight for my next guest, and she has graciously agreed to be interviewed, Lorraine Woodwork of the Immigration Reform Law Institute and Attorneys United for a Safer America. Lorraine, thank you for being on the podcast today.
Well, thank you, Jeff. It's actually Attorneys United for a Secure America.
I was so close. Dang it. Attorneys United for a Secure America.
Yes.
There you go. So Lorraine was here this weekend and doing a couple of different things. One was giving a keynote address at the quarterly meeting of Oregonians for Immigration Reform. Also working with local lawyers in the area. So again, thanks for being on the podcast. And tell me, talk about what you're doing with Early and what you're doing with lawyers across the nation.
Okay. Well, with the Immigration Reform Law Institute, we believe in having secure borders and protecting United States sovereignty. We also would like enforcement of immigration laws so that everyone can come to the United States the same way, as opposed to some people being able to jump in line and get ahead of people who come here the legal way. Mm. And so we're against illegal immigration on that respect. But then we also want to be able to protect America's sovereignty and basically have people who do immigrate here be productive members of society and be more of a benefit than a burden on our country.
Right, because the old saying goes, you can have open borders and a welfare state, but you can't have both, right?
Right, and if you have open borders, you'll soon cease to have a country.
Right, right. And so let's talk about that. So many people on the left accuse us of being racist and against immigration and all of those buzzwords. Right. What are the problems with that line of thinking, and what are the problems with illegal immigration?
Well, that line of thinking is dishonest because the United States admits over 1 million legal immigrants every year, and that's more than the rest of the world combined. I mean, so the two questions I have is, why do people come here illegally if they can come here legally? Mm-hmm. And second, well, of course, it's for the benefits and what they can get free from Americans that they haven't paid into. Then the second question is, what's the rest of the world doing? There's other countries where immigrants can migrate to, they can go to, become citizens of, and why aren't other countries in the world accepting as many immigrants as they're trying to force the United States to do?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting question. It almost, I mean, it sounds like a conspiracy theory almost, but if you really boil it down, why are we pressured to accept so many? It's almost as if it's a deliberate undermining of the nation.
Well, it does. And one of the things I've come to understand is that, well, the United States Constitution was written for the benefit of Americans. So American citizens have the right to address their government. In fact, the government works for American citizens, and the government is accountable to American citizens. They just have to hold a government accountable. When the founders established the United States, they wanted it to be a limited and a constrained government that, you know, was going to be overseen by the public.
Right. And ironically, maybe, but you're an immigrant yourself, right? You came
correct.
Here legally from Canada.
Right. When I was 16, it took many years
and
a lot of waiting, and I had a very interesting experience. But actually, quickly back on the Constitution.
Oh, yeah.
The United States has the only constitution in the world where it's for the benefit of the citizens to protect them against a tyrannical government, whereas the rest of the world, including Canada, has a constitution that only gives rights to citizens that they can easily take away at any moment.
Right.
So they don't have a contract where the citizens are necessarily protected.
No, that's a very important point. And that's my political involvement comes from a deeper understanding. As every day I learn more and more about the constitutional restraints on government. And that's what it's all about. It's not restraints on the citizens. It recognizes the inherent inalienable rights that are born into every individual human being.
Those are God-given rights.
Yes.
And the only way Americans should be able to lose those rights is if they allow the government to take those rights. And that should never happen. And Americans should understand what their Constitution stands for. And I do see a lot of people who don't understand the full complexity. Well, it's actually not that complex, but what the United States Constitution stands for. And this is why millions of people want to come to the United States, because it's the only free country in this world.
Right. It's the shining city on the hill, right? As Reagan said. And so let's talk more about some of the issues that we see with illegal immigration. You had some shocking slides yesterday in your presentation, and let's talk about some of that stuff. We see a lot of criminality, but we also see a lot of, and here's another thing we always get accused of, is saying that Latinos are responsible for most of the crime, and that's not the case. It's not about the color of the skin. It's you know, the element that comes in illegally and flaunts our laws. So let's talk, you know, MS-13 and rape trees and drug cartels and all that stuff. I mean, that stuff goes on every day at the border.
Right, exactly. Well, immigration affects every aspect of our life, not only through crime and education and our health and our taxes and even our elections. But if we were to focus on crime, with open borders, we're seeing a lot of narco-terrorism. Mm. We're also seeing the gang members. And I mean, these are not contributing members to society. And I think the United States doesn't need any more criminals. We have enough, you know, problems with that. But once somebody enters this country illegally or overstays their visa, they become an illegal alien. And then that is their first crime. After that, there's many more crimes. And a lot of people who don't come here the proper way often don't have the best of intentions for the United States. And one of the facts I gave yesterday is around 60% of people that do get caught, we don't know, you know, the people that don't get caught, but they're coming here to take and get the freebies and get the free handouts.
The welfare state.
Right. Then we have another element are the terrorists from terror nations. We also have people who are related to the human smuggling and the drug smuggling. And that's not American values. That's not what Americans stand for.
Right. And importing crime seems like a, you know, on its face, a self-destructive thing to do.
It is. And it will undermine the sovereignty. You know, and slavery is against the law. And yet we have a big slavery problem in this country. And ironically, January is National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month. And so that's where I'm trying to put a big focus on, because we are having, as you said, the rape trees. And what that is these poor little children are rented or sold by their parents in South America to some weird people that, and they come on this long track into the United States, pretend to be family unit. And the moment they enter the United States, these children are raped. Their clothes are taken off and they're raped and violated. And these are like 5, 6, 8, 9, 10-year-old boys and girls who are being harmed. And that also isn't.
And then the disgusting act is followed by another disgusting act of throwing their underwear into a tree as sort of a trophy.
A trophy, it is. It is. And a lot of these, you know, horrible, perverted people are going to come in and hurt the actual immigrant communities and Americans' children and grandchildren. So this is something that needs to be stopped. And another good reason for a border wall and stronger enforcement.
Yeah. And that's part of the problem. Obviously, we need a barrier, but we also have laws that activists have sued over and over so that we cannot enforce the law. And that's a real problem. I know, you know, I hear this stuff all the time. I live in Portland, so I hear all of the accusations. Talk about some of the, why is it so important to enforce the laws that we actually have right now?
It's part of human nature. Everyone wants to be able to play by the same set of rules. And by allowing people to come in here illegally and benefit and do better than American citizens or even legal immigrants who played by the rules, that is just fundamentally unfair to everyone. And you're actually rewarding bad behavior. And when you reward bad behavior, you get more of it. So that's, we need to stop that.
The other side will often say that, well, that's, you know, you're blowing that out of proportion, or that only happens occasionally. And most people that come over the border are here, are good people that don't commit crimes, and are productive members of society, or good members of the community, and you're breaking up families and that kind of stuff. How would you respond to those kinds of statements?
Well, let's unravel that question.
Because I hear this a lot.
Oh, yeah, you do. I mean, they say breaking up families. Well, first of all, they did the breaking up of the families by coming into this country illegally. And if you look at it, Americans get separated from their children, their families every day by going to prison, or there's divorce, there's all sorts of or parents die. I mean, so that excuse is just bogus. It's an outright lie.
Because they're committing a crime by crossing the border in the first place.
So. Right. Or even an American.
And they're consciously making that choice.
Right. They've consciously made that choice to break up their families. And even we talk about the parents who've rented or sold their kids. Well, they've already separated their kids. I mean, any parent in the United States who dared did that, they'd have their children taken away and put in foster care. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, so it's completely bogus arguments that really has no validity or merit to them. Mm-hmm. So, and then the next one you have is like, well, they're just here for to work and everything. Well, what about all the legal immigrants who come here? And what about American families who work? And by the competition of illegal aliens, not only are they depressing American workers' wages, they're also taking jobs away from Americans who are more than willing to take those same jobs. In fact, Koch Food Industries, or distributors, last year, they had an ICE raid where 234 illegal aliens were picked up and taken away by ICE. And the next day, Koch Food Distributors had a job fair, and thousands of Americans showed up for those very same jobs.
Wow.
Yes. And they ended up hiring a number of American citizens who were legally authorized to work there.
Wow. That's, yeah. So it's kind of a myth that it's the jobs that Americans won't do.
I mean, some of the jobs Americans won't do are like committing crimes, but we don't need any more. We have plenty. We have our prisons who are very full of people, and we don't need any more foreign criminals to come here.
Right. So on the other side, you see people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar and the Squad and all those far left individuals who are calling for, and many of the Democratic presidential candidates even are calling for the abolition of ICE. How would you respond to that?
Well, that's our law enforcement. They do a lot of really great work protecting American citizens, and they also protect legal immigrants. So Americans and legal immigrants are protected by ICE. Mm. And up in Washington State, they're now trying to prevent ICE from going into the courthouses to detain illegal aliens. And I think that's fundamentally unfair. As a lawyer in California, I had clients who went to court with me. They were Americans, and they were detained. Mm. So why is it okay for Americans to be detained in courthouses and yet not illegal aliens?
Yeah, and we made that illegal quite a while ago here in Oregon. And there have been judges who snuck illegal aliens out the back door of their own courtroom to avoid, because they heard a rumor that an ICE agent was outside waiting to detain them.
Right.
Why is there such... I don't know if you can answer this question, but it just seems like there's such an anti-law enforcement attitude, especially on the left. Where does that stem from? How do they not want to follow the rule of law?
Well, it'd be scary to get inside their minds, so I'm not going to do that. But I think a lot of it is to try and break American sovereignty. I think I see that they can keep the public ignorant. And I think as long as the public doesn't realize that illegal aliens are actually being treated better than American citizens and legal immigrants, that people might actually realize there's something really fundamentally wrong on how illegal aliens tend to spend less time in prison for the same exact crime that an American citizen has committed. And yet, they're paroled sooner. They're given all sorts of protections, while as American citizens who've committed crimes and been convicted for them spend a longer time before they're able to be released from prison. Now, that is fundamentally unfair, and that's not how that's a violation of equal protection. In fact, I've heard, these other groups that support open borders saying, oh, well, they should be illegal aliens should be protected by the Constitution, too. Well, no, that's not true. As a real immigrant myself, who is now a citizen, I was told the Constitution didn't apply to me. It was only people subject to the jurisdiction they're in. And only as an immigrant, I had certain qualifications or requirements I had to follow. Mm-hmm. Now, a legal alien should have even less rights than an American citizen or a legal immigrant. And we go back to got to play by the same set of rules, and that's what's fair for all people.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point because, as I recall it, you came to the United States in what, 1986?
1980, you're trying to age me, aren't you? Oh, you devil. Oh.
No. That's
in the early 1980s. I came here.
When you were 2.5.
Right. Yeah, I was still in the womb. No. I mean, I was a teenager, graduated from high school, and I wanted to come to the United States sooner than waiting for the list. So I applied to go to college. I was admitted, and I had to follow all the requirements. I'd gone through the documentation. I had to show I was able to provide for myself and not become a public dependent. I was also had to show that I didn't have any contagious diseases or a criminal background. And this was even though they already had my application to become an immigrant and a citizen later on, I had to follow through the same procedures to become a foreign student and follow all those rules.
And they're not, obviously, illegal immigration. There's no means by which we can do any of that vetting, right? So we don't know who's coming across the
border. We don't know who they are. And a lot of times they'll pay for fake IDs. And a lot of American social security numbers get hijacked by illegal aliens. They get sold on the, somewhere in a park. Mm-hmm. I know in Los Angeles, there's a little park where you just pay $200 and you get people's identity.
Wow.
I mean, identity theft is a big problem. It's not just people from outside of the country. It's people inside using mm-hmm. American citizens' social security number. In fact, there was a case about 10 years ago where a woman who was working in California was being investigated by the IRS because apparently she lived in New York, but there was some guy in California who was working in construction, and she tried to tell the IRS, look, I can't work in an office in New York and also work at the same time working in the construction field. Yeah. In fact, I don't have the capability to work in construction. And they said, no, no, no. And so she had to prove that she was a victim of identity theft, and some guy was filing her income tax before her, so he was getting all the benefits and rebates, and she was having to spend thousands of dollars to defend herself with the IRS. And who wants to deal with the IRS?
Yeah, I've personally been targeted by the IRS under Lois Lerner, so I'm
oh boy,
not a fan.
well, I have to say, not everyone in government is a bad character, but I mean, the IRS does work hard, but they are limited to the piece of paper, and so sometimes not everyone can think logically and realize.
And it's such a massive agency that the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing, and so you get a different agent, and they don't have the background. It's a mess.
That's one of the reasons why I like a smaller government, because there's less. There's less opportunity for making errors and mistakes.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, we had a case here in 2005, I believe it was. There were a couple of brothers in Washington County. They were Hispanic, and they had this ID mill going where they were cranking out some estimates were, I mean, it was thousands of fake Oregon driver's licenses. Mm-hmm. And then, so anybody could pay, you know, a couple $100, get one of those, and then move to a different state and change their information and then, you know, have that permanent fake ID. And, Oregon isn't compliant with real ID yet, but I suppose we will be at some point if they figure it out. Maybe they'll figure it out at some point. But anyway, but Oregon is sort of a hotbed of being able to come as an illegal alien, get a fake ID, and then disperse across the nation with and change your information over and get more legitimate ID, and you'll never be discovered.
And that's completely unfair to American citizens, the American worker, the American family, to be able to have people take advantage of the system. I just don't understand how people aren't more outraged by this disparity of justice.
Right. And it's not about the race or the quality of human being as much as it is fundamental fairness and the rule of law.
Yeah, actually, speaking of race, what was it? Just a couple of weeks ago, somebody from Canada was here illegally, and he was charged on weapons crime, and he was in the state of Virginia, ironically, and he got arrested, and he's being prosecuted as an illegal alien from Canada. So, I mean, the issue with alien is means foreigner. You're a foreigner. So if you're from another country, you come here. It doesn't matter what you look like, what your age is, or your gender, or anything about it. Mm-hmm. If you don't have the proper documentation, if you didn't follow and comply with the rules, then you are an alien. You know, even tourists can become aliens if they overstay their time.
Sure. And you go to any other country on earth, and you are expected to go through the steps and assimilate into society. And exactly. And they have, far left activists on this issue have made it so that assimilation is somehow racist now. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, you just look at the southern border of Mexico. They have a wall bigger than the one we're building.
Well, I won't necessarily point to one particular spectrum of the political spectrum, because sometimes there's people on both sides. So I like to refer to them as the open borders crowd, the ignorant people who they either know what they're doing or they're completely oblivious to the dangers that are going to be brought in for all Americans and communities. And I've seen communities devastated. And then we have this sanctuary issue. It doesn't just, you know, if you're in sanctuary jurisdiction, the criminals don't just stay there. They go and, you know, propagate in other sanctuary jurisdictions. And you're just basically providing sanctuary protection for corrupt politicians and criminals with no sanctuary for poor, you know, really good Americans.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit, because here in Oregon, we had Measure 88 in 2014 that made it illegal to get give out driver's cards to illegal aliens. The legislature, in their wisdom, upheld the will of the voters by completely undermining the will of voters and passing that last session anyway and giving illegal aliens driver's cards. What's the problem with driver's cards? I mean, other than that, yeah, we've talked a lot about the fundamental fairness of unfairness of different application of the law, but let's talk driver's cards specifically. What's the problem with that?
Right. Well, California had that issue at, well, back in 2014, I worked as a volunteer judge, and I heard traffic court cases, and I was specifically told, look, if this person's an illegal alien and they have their car impounded, you're supposed to let that car be the car released with no fine,
no storage fees,
wow. Nothing. Just let that go with no charge. And I said, well, what about an American citizen? They said, oh, that's okay to charge them an impound fee and storage fees and also fine them for their traffic violation. That's okay. And I said, well, that doesn't seem to be equal justice for all people that show up for traffic court. There's a group of people who've already broken the law by being here illegally. Mm. And they said, well, you have to release the car because they need to get to their jobs. And I said, well, what about Americans who need to get to their work who've had their car impounded?
What jobs? They're not supposed to be able to be hired.
Exactly. They're not supposed to be getting a job. They're not supposed to be working. It basically undermines job opportunities. And also the employers who are paying under the table are not contributing to payroll taxes.
Right, right. And you're taking jobs away from Americans, but also there's no incentive. When they get driver's cards, they get insurance, they get a job. There's no incentive for them to go through the legal route and become citizens. Why bother?
Well, actually, in some cases, they aren't getting car insurance. What I've heard from a lot of car insurance places is what they do is they get insurance for 1 month. So they can register their car, and then they stop paying. And so they're basically driving without insurance for the remainder of the year. They want to have a car. Some of them don't even bother registering their vehicle. So they're just driving around, or they're stealing somebody's car and driving it around and not taking any responsibility for their vehicle. So it doesn't really solve the problem. And that's what people were promised in California, is that, oh, if they get driver's licenses, then they'll have car insurance and then we won't have to worry about uninsured motorists. Well, no, that was a complete lie. It's completely bogus. And we still have to pay for uninsured motorists.
Right. Our insurance rates didn't go down at all, did they?
No, they went up. They went up higher. And yeah. And our roads are more congested, and we're not getting the taxes and fees to pay for the roads to be upgraded. But our corrupt politicians are hoping that the sucker American taxpayer is going to be putting out more money so they can pay off for special deals and provide insurance for illegal aliens, and maybe we'll get our roads fixed, but we're going to be giving this money out to people who have not even contributed to society. And if they contribute, it's nowhere near the amount of money they get from the tax builders.
That's exactly right. And I think it was Tennessee a couple of years ago had experimented with driver's cards and then repealed it because it didn't work.
They realized.
Are you aware of?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And they realized that it was not as it had been promised to them. And they realized immediately they needed to repeal that. Mm. And there was no real business for non-citizens to be having driver's cards. They're not supposed to be driving on a road. They're not even supposed to be in this country.
Well, right. Yeah. Let's get back to the main point, right? So, and that goes to your point, right? That illegal aliens get a lot better treatment than legal aliens or Americans.
Yeah. It made me wonder, why did I bother going through the system? I don't resent what I had to go through, and I understood exactly, even at 16 years of age, I understood the importance of being checked to make sure I didn't have any contagious diseases, because you don't want to be spreading diseases and creating like a pandemic.
Yeah.
And I also understood about not having a criminal background, because they want people who come here who are going to be contributing members of society. So it took a long time, and I don't resent that, but I do resent the fact that there are people who cheat and cut in the line, and they get benefits that they're not entitled to, and yet our corrupt politicians keep looking the other way, and our government officials are like, oh, well, and it's like, that's what I see the problem is our public is not holding the government accountable. And when I worked for government, when the public got upset with something and they stuck to it and they kept pushing the government to change, the government made a difference.
That's right. Let's talk real quick about, speaking of holding the government accountable, and I understand that you represent a nonpartisan nonprofit, so you can't take a particular stand.
No.
But it seems pretty obvious 2020 immigration is going to be a pretty big subject. That, you know, we got the presidential election coming up.
It is the number one issue, and when I've seen results of polls, and it doesn't matter how somebody's their political persuasion, this is the number one issue for Americans. They want to see that border wall finished. They want to see they want to see immigration enforcement, because most people understand the fundamental fairness of equal treatment and no more game playing and no more special treatment to people who shouldn't be getting special treatment in the first place.
Right. So we've talked a lot about the Constitution. It's in the was it Article 3, I believe it is, where immigration is the purview of the president
And the federal government.
The federal government,
the sovereignty of the country. Then there's also the 14th Amendment, but that doesn't provide birthright citizenship. It's only for even my sister was born in 1960 in Colorado Springs, Colorado, still has never gotten her citizenship because she didn't go through the legal process. My parents at that time, they were there temporarily to deal with contagious diseases of polio and tuberculosis. So my sister had not gone through the process of becoming an American citizen. So she's now still in Canada. But the situation is, anyone who's born in the United States, it has to be to a legal resident or a citizen. So a lot of these illegal aliens who've been doing this since the 1960s really have been unjustly rewarded with citizenship for their child. And that is absolutely wrong. And I believe that's going to be an issue that's coming before the courts. And then we'll talk about recruiting attorneys.
Yeah, absolutely. So talk about is there a case that's making its way through the federal courts?
Oh my gosh, we got the public charge rule.
Okay.
That's going through. And that's been in effect even before the United States became a country. I mean, in 1640, people had to come here. They needed to be able to provide for themselves. And we also have that case. So there's the public charge rule. Then there's also the DACA, there's five illegal aliens who are the DACA recipients who think that they should be allowed to get public benefits and still get their citizenship.
Mm. So eventually we will probably see those at the Supreme Court.
Oh, they're scheduled to be heard this year.
Okay.
So,
okay,
it's kind of a shame because 2009, President Obama said it was an unconstitutional executive order, but this is 2009. They've had 10 years to get themselves legal status, and they've never bothered.
Right, right. Okay, so obviously this, it's equal protection under the law and equal access to the law, and the 14th Amendment never was intended to grant birthright citizenship. We know
to
that.
To non-citizens. And
yes.
What it was intended as a temporary measure to provide citizenship to people who had formerly been slaves and the offspring of slaves.
Right,
and
right,
that was the only intention of the 14th Amendment, not to say, hey, if you're a foreigner, if you can sneak into this country and drop a baby, poof, they've got citizenship. No, that was never the intention.
Right, right.
So,
yeah. Talk about what Early is doing and recruiting attorneys to file these cases. What are you guys doing?
Okay, we're trying to recruit attorneys, and that's where where I come in. I'm the director of Attorneys United for a Secure America. My role is to recruit attorneys across all 50 states. We are gaining traction and more attorneys, and the public is hearing about our organization. And the more people hear about it, they go, hey, we've got people on our side. And the Immigration Reform Law Institute is the only voice for the American people. So if you know an attorney or you are an attorney, please go to our website at AUSAmerica, so AUSAmerica.org, AUSAmerica.org, or IRLI.org, and you can sign up to join. We want law students, we want lawyers, we want investigators, even professors could come and help by writing articles on behalf, and that's what we're doing. We've got lawsuits in all 50 states, and we need more attorneys, and we don't disclose your name, so you get privacy, and we just need to be able to have attorneys so we can file more lawsuits and be involved to protect American citizens, and we are sincere, listeners. You can look at our website to see that we really and truly are on your side, because there's a lot of organizations out there that sound good, but they're not really.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of immigration, the ACLU and all those other organizations on the other side, on the open border side, that have armies of attorneys. So it's really important that we fight back with the lawfare tactic that we have tended to underuse.
Yeah, we have. And this is a great opportunity. And once attorneys hear about my organization, I've met a number of wonderful Oregon attorneys, and they're already signing up. And I know we need more. And I think there's no reason to be afraid. My name's out there, and I've never had any problems. And nobody would dare come after me. And if they do, they're going to be very sorry. So there's really nothing to be afraid of. And I think as an attorney, you really aren't supposed to be afraid. And Americans deserve to be represented. We have too many people on the other side representing illegal aliens and people who have no business coming in here. We need, and the majority of Americans fully support the mission of the Immigration Reform Law Institute. So it makes sense that we should be able to have lots of attorneys, you know, coming to assist us. We provide, you know, all sorts of, it's not that you're going to be putting yourself in debt. You're going to be able to help us where you can. And we do, you know, we are able to come up with some financial arrangements to help you out so that you're not doing this for free or putting yourself in debt, like I said.
Lorraine Woodwork, thanks for being on the Behind the Curtain podcast. Give one more quick shout out to the organizations you're representing, how we can find you, social media links if you've got them. Give it a big plug.
Okay, thank you. I am on LinkedIn. For AUSA, and that is Attorneys United for a Secure America. And then there's also the Immigration Reform Law Institute, where I work. So, and they are IRLI.org and AUSAAmerica.org. And both of those organizations, you can find what we stand for, what we have, find articles. You can find all sorts of information about the actual immigration policies and how immigration works. So you can get yourself educated, and it's open to everybody. And we also have a sister organization that I'm going to mention for the first time. Oh boy. Yeah. The Federation for American Immigration Reform, which is FAIR, FAIRUS. org, and they are an outstanding organization. They provide lots of information. And if you're interested in having a town hall in your community, I would contact them, and they are fabulous, and we love them dearly.
Yes, I know they do a lot of work with Oregonians for immigration reform as well.
So yes, they do.
Great organization. Lorraine Woodwork, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right.
If you like this podcast, the best way you can support it is by leaving a rating and subscribing. And don't forget to buy my book, Behind the Curtain, Inside the Network of Progressive Billionaires and Their Campaign to Undermine Democracy. Now it's on to my second interview with Dimitri, Lily, and Andre of Slavic Vote.
Okay, welcome back into the Behind the Curtain podcast. I'm Jeff Reynolds, your host, and I am here with three Russian folks, and I'm going to do my very best not to butcher their names, but Dmitry Saschenko, Andrei Grigoryov, and Lily Zhukova. Yes. All right. So these are three of the co-founders of the Slavic Vote Group, a group that has reached into the Slavic and Russian communities to register voters both in Oregon and Washington. I've been trying to get you guys on the podcast for a long time, and I'm really excited to have you on. So thanks for being here, everybody.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So, yeah, absolutely. Why don't you just tell me real quick how the whole idea got started to get Slavic Vote together and get organized, and and everybody's pointing at everybody else. Nobody wants to talk. So, ladies first. Lily, why don't you go ahead and start?
I'll actually defer to these two because they were the idea creators.
Oh, they were. Okay. All right. So you came along later and
a little bit.
Upped the beauty quotient.
Yes.
All right, Andre, why don't you go ahead and tell us how it got started?
Yeah, so how it got started is just us, you know, being frustrated with the Slavic community, seeing the low involvement rate in the politics. So we're just like, why isn't anybody doing anything? Nobody's like really voting. Mm-hmm. So me and Dimitri got together and we're like, let's make an Instagram page that just start, you know, posting memes or anything just to get the Slavic people more engaged in politics. Mm-hmm. So you know, it just started out of that frustration.
And when did that first start?
About March time.
March.
Last year.
Right? 2019.
Our first post, I think, is around March something.
Okay. And Dimitri, how did it go from there? I mean, it's just an Instagram page, and then all of a sudden, you guys are like going gangbusters. You're on fire. filing federal government forms and all this stuff. So
Yeah. I mean, things really skyrocketed right around the same time. But I guess I'll just rewind just for a minute. Originally, it even started earlier. The idea itself started the 2018 around like August time. Me and Andrea originally met to partner up in the food cart business, and we were talking about how to work on the food cart and things like that. And we started talking about just politics in general, and we just realized that we have a lot of things in common when it comes to politics, and we just started brainstorming just having ideas what to do.
So after about 30 seconds, you both realized you weren't Portland liberals, right?
Correct. And then we kind of saw each other within this church community. We seen each other here and there. Mm-hmm. So we kind of recognized each other. But never really had any kind of acquaintance before that. So, yeah. And that was kind of the original kind of starting point where we wanted to do something, but nothing concrete. But then abruptly, I had to leave out of state to the East Coast. Me and my wife had to live in D.C. She was interning at the White House. So while we were living there, you know, I've started seeing all this stuff that's happening in D.C., all of this just in general, just seeing how big government is. And myself being partly libertarian, you know, you just see it right in front of you, this whole city that is formed to control our lives.
Yeah, it's pretty much an entire city dedicated to anti-constitutional principles, right?
Exactly. And that's, so. Yeah, exactly. And I remember at one point I even went to Jeff Reynolds. I mean, Jeff...
Hyen.
Jeff...
Grossman?
The senator.
Kubler? No. Jeff Merkley.
Jeff Merkley.
There's a lot of us here.
Yes. I went to Jeff, the senator Jeff.
Merkley.
Merkley, yes. And we just kind of spoke a little bit. And I just talked to him about, you know, about a Slavic community, how much of us there is, and that how can we get more involved and how can we be more represented? And he said that a long time ago, he released a bunch of letters to the Slavic community, to the leadership, and I think he even said 200 or 300 letters to different leaders.
Wow.
To see if he can create like a Slavic, like a Russian caucus or some kind of representation. Mm-hmm. And nobody responded. And, you know, that was a little bit, I was disappointed to hear that. And, you know, shortly after, I really thought, you know, we really need to do something. And then that's when we came back. I want to say came back in 2019, around January. We really started meeting together with a few other of our friends and formed a kind of an idea of what we're going to do, and really around registering people to vote within churches.
Mm. Yeah, and that's a really interesting thing. It's been, I think, people from both parties have tried to reach out to the Russian community and the church community and Slavic community, and over a long period of time, and it's been really difficult to break through. And what I keep hearing is that it's the church elders were telling most of their parishioners not to get involved and that kind of thing, and that it's not their problem kind of stuff. Is that accurate?
Well, yeah. For the longest time, you know, we grew up hearing stories of the government persecuting. That's how our communities here fleeing the Soviet Union, former Soviet Union, because of the persecution for religion. So it's always been a very negative kind of a view on the government.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard the stories, and Andre heard plenty of the stories.
Yeah.
I have not.
Oh.
And Lily has a different story.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure Andre has a kind of a, you want to give kind of an idea what the Slavic community, the view?
Yeah, I think that involvement of the Slavic community goes all the way back to the Soviet Union. I was born in the Soviet Union.
You were?
I was born in 1989.
Okay. And you were born here, right, Dimitri?
I was born also in the Soviet Union.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
We were born at the same time.
Yeah, Ukraine, okay. Ukraine was still part of the Soviet Union. Then in 1991, it became a separate sovereign nation. But at that time in the Soviet Union, you know, everybody would vote and stuff, but your votes, you know, everybody would vote, but the same guy gets elected.
It was assumed that everybody was going to vote communist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a thing, whenever they had, you know, it's sort of what we see in North Korea was going on in the Soviet Union. You know, when the leader dies, everybody cries, not because they miss him, but because they're forced to. My grandpa and my parents were forced to go to events. For example, they would have these events during the day of victory. They had parades. Mm-hmm. And people from work, they had to go to the parades and they had to, you know, cheer on, and because it was part of the process. Mm-hmm. If you didn't cheer, if you weren't excited for the parade, you were labeled somebody who's against the state and you might end up in jail or something like that. There's something like crazy like this in the Soviet Union. So people come in here, they're like, government is bad, voting doesn't matter. You know, we're not going to vote at all. We're just going to be here in our place. We're going to do our life the way we like it. If nobody touches it, we're fine. Mm. So,
yeah. And so, Lily, you said you don't have these kinds of stories. So what is your story?
I do not. Actually, in fact, I think it's interesting. But my parents don't share a lot of, like, I don't hear a lot of that from them. And actually, my grandpa fought during World War II. We only came here for the reason is my dad's family was all relocated here. And they're like, my grandpa had a prophecy that the family was going to be together here in one tree. And so they got very eager in making sure we were here before Grandpa passed away. Grandpa ended up living for 12 more years after we arrived here. But so, yeah, we simply came. I mean, we didn't seek a status, immigration. Like, we just came here, like, applied as we were coming to a new country. And my dad's family was helpful. Like, we had a place to live and all that. So we had a different experience, and it was very interesting. And it's always interesting to hear that because we, yeah, I mean, I don't know if Grandpa didn't have that, I don't know if I'd be here.
And that's why, you know, her family voted all the time, and they always vote and they encourage their families to vote.
Yeah. And I mean, we voted in Ukraine all the time. Parents did. I remember we would go to the ballots, and it was funny because voting there is different. It's like a caucus, which is not done here in Washington, but it would have those booths and you'd close your little thing with the thing. And I still have that experience and that visual in my mind when parents did that.
You know, I did some work for the Cruz campaign in 2016, and mm-hmm. it was down in Nevada during the Nevada caucus. So mm-hmm. That was my first experience with a caucus state, yeah. And it's a completely different thing, right? You actually have to get involved as a community, and you know, y'all go to the school gym and, yep. and y'all vote at the same time, you know, here in Oregon and now in Washington right. as well. You have vote by mail, so right. it's a completely isolated yeah. process. So it's right. a different experience.
It is. I wish we lived in a caucus state.
Yeah, I do too, actually. I think that would do a lot to get people more engaged and more civic minded, you know?
True. I just think our voter turnout would suffer even more.
Yeah,
which is the only downside.
Probably, yeah.
Because if you have to come physically, right, versus this, you get in mail, so we get more people who can do it at their yeah. leisure time.
Yeah. Anyway, so you guys got together over Instagram and then over a food truck and then finally decided, hey, this is something we got to do. So you've gone gang, but you formed a 501c3 and.
Well, it was before that we just started getting together. We really didn't know what this would look like, but we just knew we have to do something and we want to register people. So we started getting together with our group of friends, and then now we started hearing from some of the friends that our pastor, our church, wants to organize some kind of organization that would help on the legal side of the Slavic community once things get even worse, because they're starting to see kind of like the writing on the wall that things are gonna. Things are going downhill from now.
Yeah. Talk about that. What was it that motivated a lot of folks and really made this movement take off?
Well, I mean, the vaccine bill, which wasn't really associated with us, started around March as well, or probably before
April 1st. April 1st was Washington.
Well, yeah, that was one of the big rally that happened in Olympia. And that's
because of that.
Yeah, we keep hearing these rallies are happening and nobody was really going to them. But all of a sudden we hear this major one that's being planned April 1st. And me and Andre already kind of been talking about this, like, hey, let's go in and see what this is. Like, we didn't expect much at all, but apparently there was like 2,000 to 3,000 mm-hmm. people there from the Slavic community
yeah.
There to protest some of those terrible bills that we're going through. One of them is vaccine. The other was the sexual education and so on.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of the folks like Dominica and those folks down in the Mid-Valley and Anna and those folks. And they're really fired up about the sex education thing going on, and, you know, because it's being forced down everybody's throat, you know, regardless of your religious beliefs, and you won't have exemptions and that kind of thing. Same with the vaccine bill. We had the bill in, you know, you guys are all from Vancouver. You're from Portland. Yeah.
He's actually from Portland.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize.
And the other one?
Yeah, you're the one. Okay.
So. Just always the different one.
Yep. But the vaccine bill in Oregon, too. And that's, I was like, you know, when I first heard it, I'm like, I'm pro-vaccine. What's the big deal? You know, why is everybody freaking out? And then I looked at it and the list went from this to that. And, you know, they wanted to, the thing that really flipped the switch for me was HPV for grade school kids. What does a second grader need a vaccine against an STD for, you know, that's the, you know, really crazy stuff. So, so that's really was a touch point for a lot of folks. And we heard Senator Boquist at a meeting a couple of months ago, and he said that there were something like 7,000 Russian moms down at the Capitol trying to talk to all of their senators and representatives, and it really exploded.
It was amazing.
Yeah. So,
and it was interesting because we had this idea kind of growing before this thing even exploded. So it was kind of nice to see kind of the community from all sorts of, you know, from all the angles come out and just explode at the same time. And we really just kind of jumped on this wagon, and it really didn't stop ever since. So we've been moving since that happened. So it's been crazy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I do have to note something here at this point that, all of you seem to be rather young, compared to me anyway. is that something that, that was, you see the folks that have organized the Old Believers, the Slavic Vote folks, you know, all of these Russian people that didn't get involved at all. It almost seems like it took the younger generation to kind of spur the older generation into action. Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A little bit.
Because so the older people came here and they still have the older mindset, which is like, you know, we just want a calm life. We're not going to do anything as long as they don't bother us. And then the younger generation is growing up, going to universities, going to colleges, and they're like realizing, okay, like all these things are going on. You know, all these bills are being passed, these people getting elected, and we can vote, but we're not voting. Why don't we vote? Because we get together around the table, family dinner, and we talk about like, man, taxes went up again. You know, property taxes in Multnomah County are like ridiculous, right? We talk about these things all the time. But then young people are like, well, let's vote against that. You know, let's, and the younger generation is sort of like, oh, I mean, voting works. Sure.
Yeah.
Let's vote. So I think it's the younger generation being, growing up here, they know how it functions.
Mm.
They understand more how democracy works in the United States, and they're slowly pulling their parents and their grandparents to partake in the process.
Yeah. So the older generation kind of came here to escape oppression and just wanted to live their lives and not get involved. And you guys are a little bit more, you see a little bit more what's going on and have to kind of drag them along to.
Yeah.
But it sounds like it hasn't been that difficult to drag them along now that things have gotten a little bit crazier.
Yeah, I mean, it things kind of, because everything's happening, so it's a little bit easier to explain. And they see these things happening all the time. Mm-hmm. And so it's getting worse and worse and worse every year.
Yeah.
So they're waking up. The pastors are slowly talking about it a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, and that's what led to that big event. And then just about a month after that, when we were just still an idea, really, Lily came along and she saw our Facebook, our Instagram post, and she got excited because she's been
shared it actually.
Yeah,
I would have never looked at it. I would be honest here, but I do not follow Slavic pages.
And she came along just at the perfect time because she had the political experience already. I've been studying it just on my own, kind of listening to a lot of podcasts and kind of learning as I went. But Lily's been studying it and then kind of had a lot of experience. So it was great to have her come on so early on and just really explore it with professionalism. And now we have nonprofit status and basically 501c3 pending.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to talk to you, Lily, because you You were pushing back there on my comment earlier, so.
Well, because I think for Washington, at least, and is actually there, I mean, it's moms who are like super older than me, like double my age, who started the movement in April 1st in Washington. Yeah, I mean, there's a mom of five kids and she's like in her 40s. I would have never started that rally myself. Yeah. So maybe like, I think for, and even in like Oregon, like Slavic communities, like I think it's parents who are feeling the attack, because honestly, I'm not a property owner. Mm-hmm. So my parents feel attacked, but they vote. Like my parents engage in that. Would I ever sit down and complain about that? Not necessarily. You know, I as a college student, undergrad, you know, going to law school, it's like I have other things on my mind. So I would actually say for people in my age, in like my early 20s, I think I would have never started something. I always tell this to the guys. I would have never started an organization because there's other things I want to accomplish, other things to do. So I would say in Washington, we actually had more of an older group that of moms that were super passionate and just were like, our rights are being taken away. We got to do something.
Yeah. And that sounds a little bit more familiar to me because I was never politically involved either. And I got involved in the Tea Party movement. Mm-hmm. So I went from zero to, you know, head first into it, you know, and that was 10, 11 years ago. And so I was in my late 30s when that happened, you know. Yeah. So, but that's kind of the way life goes, right? You start your career, you eventually get married and have kids, and then you realize all this stuff is affecting me, and now I need to start getting involved, right? Yeah. So, yeah.
Exactly. It's incredible that these two are in their earlier careers and realizing it now, because I think that's something that, right, we wait till that stage to see, oh my goodness, property taxes is high or my business taxes are high, right? But not early on as like me, even though, and for me, I also have a different background in that I've studied it. I know it. I've worked it, been part of the politics movement. And so sometimes it's very difficult for me to say, let's do it. Just because there's so much like analytical I go through and I'm like, is that really a decision?
You worked in the swamp.
Yeah. Oh, you did. Yes. You actually worked in the swamp.
Yeah,
huh?
I worked for the state, Washington state government.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. So the smaller swamp, Okay. So let's talk about, now you've created something, you got this movement going. What have you guys been doing? What's the focus been and what have the results been?
Well, when Lily came on, you know, really, like I said, originally it was just doing registrations, but we quickly realized how much more potential we have. And Lily brought all these great ideas from education to, you know, our idea was also to help people run for local office. So, and she really helped us in that way as well. But I would love for her because she does a great job explaining.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there was a vision. There were action items that we were looking at, which was one, we were registering, right? Basic. Two, we're going to educate them. And I think the idea wasn't like the actual implementation of how we're going to do that wasn't there until I joined and I said, okay, well, what elections are we going to focus on? Where is the need, right? Mm-hmm. Where is our community? We know local elections are not as voted on. So let's think about that. So, you know, when we talk about educating, we talk about talking to candidates, right? Talking about those levies. So really we hit all three levels of elections, state, local, and national. And we really gather as much information. But the way the idea I had is in order for us to understand where the community stands, we needed to understand what they value. So we launched a survey and we got their feedback. And that told us that when I sit down with a candidate, I can ask them direct question and they say, okay, where do you stand on this? Where do you stand on this? Versus just asking general, basic, common questions.
Like, so you do the political survey of every candidate and then you publish the results on where they stand on each issue.
Yes. Yeah. So we do that. And then our final is like, we get the community engaged in wanting to run for office, whichever offices that are. And we start there, you know, really talking about the opportunities that exist, precinct committee officers, running for local offices, state government, whatever they envision, and just trying to get them in networked and then giving them some steps in helping them get there. It's kind of been the big chunks of what we're doing.
So what are the results?
The engagement has been incredible from the community. Just alone, I feel like the conversation is really in the air. Like there is, people are more talking about getting out there and voting. We noticed just from the last election, the growth of people voting has definitely increased quite a bit. So it's really exciting to see that.
And that's just from the registration efforts?
from I think everything, just overall, the idea, yeah. just being out there, being a support group there that people can go to mm-hmm. and rely on, and just kind of spreading the message that, you know, we do want to be more involved.
Yeah. Because we had folks that were registered in our community and that are, but when they get their ballot and it's two pages and they don't mm-hmm. know who stands on what, they're like, so they forget, toss right. it. Mm-hmm. So not only are we actually, so we hosted about 35 drives last year.
Wow.
And
I didn't realize it was that many.
Yeah, I think about 30, 35.
Wow.
But you went to
so, yeah. yeah.
A
so
few,
lots.
But
yeah.
apparently it was only a fraction. I had no idea.
So yes, we do not only Sundays, some weeks we would do like, you know, youth services during the week, and then there's always events and partnering things. And so this year, I mean, just January alone, it's been incredible. So many events, and you know, every month it gets busier and busier. So by hosting those, we get that engagement, and then actually getting folks to register and getting that number.
Yeah, if I called you every time we had a registration drive, you would erase my number.
Well, I had no idea, man. I knew you were busy, but man, that's crazy.
Well, just alone this year, we already had 3 or 4 registration drives just alone in January.
Yeah, and it's only January 31st. Yeah. Oh, wow.
We actually have a break this Sunday because usually every
no, I'm doing it at my church, just not as
yeah,
big a group.
Yeah, we're not doing like a more official one. But,
well, it's Super Bowl Sunday. You got to take a break for that.
As long as people not too.
We're football fans. Not
we're going to do a registration.
Not real football.
Yeah, not real
football. At a
we're party soccer as
well.
Fans.
Yeah, we love football. We're really soccer.
No, we're pretty hardcore about hardcore, especially Dima. He's
for football?
No, for registration. I was celebrating my birthday, and Dima was like, "Hey, can I do a registration?" And I'm like, "Come on, you do what you want to do." And so we had an amazing time, and Dima was just going around with a clipboard. "Are you registered?
Wow,
let's get you registered." So, yeah.
Well, that's good. So, do you have hard numbers of how many people you've registered so far?
Yeah, we do. Pretty much, we keep track of all the registered voters, not only because we want to make sure we can actually go and see if there have been, the whole process has been happened, because mm-hmm. we wouldn't know what's going to happen. So we compare that list to the voter registration list for the state mm-hmm. to see. But anyway, we're probably up to 800 yeah. for this point.
Wow. That's in what, about 6-8 months?
Yeah, so we did take some breaks. Like, we took August off in November, December, and we didn't really start till April, May.
And when we talk about breaks, we had to do a lot of organizational paperwork. And
sure.
Yeah, not doing registration.
Have meetings, form boards, all that stuff. Yeah.
So it's the fun stuff.
It's been really almost like a full-time job.
Yeah.
At this thing, yeah.
Wow, yes. That's great.
Yeah.
For some people, more.
Yeah. So what's next then? What are you guys up to for 2020?
Continue registering.
Yeah.
Getting people to vote.
Yeah, yes. We got you know, obviously, like Lilith said, that's our main priority is weekly registration drives. Mm-hmm. But we want to do events, more events like the one you've been to. SAS 2020 is kind of already on the books for May, I believe, 23rd.
Okay. Yep.
And we'll have an official announcement, and then we it's going to be a lot bigger and a lot, hopefully spread more word. The last time, I mean, there was not really a lot of Slavic community at the last SAS event.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were there and you saw, I mean, half the people were just activists.
Right, right.
Alone, so.
People that had already been involved.
Right,
and,
right.
Yeah,
so it was
trying to help.
It was awesome to see them, but at the same time, we wanted to see the Slavic community as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But we were...
So they should, the Slavs should know that, hey, there's going to be a lot of people there that are interested in helping and trying to bring them along. So there's going to be a lot of resources there. Right.
And this time we're using a different strategy, a little bit of who we choose for speakers to see if we can drive more people to come to that. So yeah, events, we got conferences, like I said, and continuing the work that we do, really going down, you know, doing those registration drives is really what's going to be there to be the presence in the community every week.
Yeah. So why don't you brag a little bit? I know you've got the website, SlavicVote.org, right? Mm-hmm. And then you've got your Facebook page and your Instagram page. How much have they grown? You've got a mailing list. How much has it grown over the last several months?
I think our mailing list is 1,000 now.
Wow.
It's incredible. And I will have to say, Fun fact is only about in the time we started the newsletter, which was about May to up now, only 3 people unsubscribed, which is incredible.
That's great. Yeah,
because yeah. I thought more people in our community would unsubscribe, right. But getting that stats last month. Yeah. And then, you know, lots of followers. Instagram is definitely one of venues where people are very engaging, answering questions. And there's about almost 900. And then
wow.
Facebook.
And they're from the local area, right? Almost, Oregon, yes. Washington.
Almost 800 on the Facebook.
Would you
as
get
well.
The, would you get some people from other states, like in Alaska?
Yeah, a little bit here and there.
Because a lot of people used to live here, and then they kind of moved to other states, and mm-hmm. they have family, and they kind of hear about it, and they follow and things like that.
Yeah,
that's pretty interesting. Any other any plans to reach out to other states and try to help out in those areas?
Well, we started almost a chapter in Spokane, which is still Washington, but it's definitely farther away. Where, yeah. They can really run their own team there and continue. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of Slavic community. There's about one out of four people is Slavic person in Spokane.
You're kidding! I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's huge. There's some interesting. That's where Matt Shea is from.
Sure. Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. and they're you know, obviously that whole thing is interesting. It's uh-huh. There, and I haven't even shared this with these guys. I had a phone call yesterday with a gentleman from Massachusetts. He got our information, and he wants to start something as well, like a possible chapter or just something similar to ours. And he's been talking about how he can do that there. So at the very least, we're here to kind of explain and tell people how they can do their own, even if they want to start a chapter or if they want to do their own thing, they're welcome to do whatever they want. But we're here to explain to them how we started and the work that we learned. And what mistakes did we learn on and things like that?
learning from your mistakes is really helpful. Last question then. It seems like the churches are important in your community in particular, very important as a social cohesion kind of thing. It's been very important to the astronomical growth of your organization. Is that accurate? I know, what role do the churches play and the pastors and the elders play?
Yeah. Before I answer that, luckily, we didn't have a lot of mistakes because Lily does not allow us to have mistakes. So luckily, she's great at that. So it wasn't a lot of mistakes, which is great.
I'm starting to understand your role here, Lily.
Yeah, there you go.
She's our legal advisor, a secretary, a co-founder. Really, you name it, she's done it. And so she's great.
Taskmaster.
Correct, yes. That's a great question. And, you know, Andre is actually a youth pastor. So
right. He
is very connected to the pastors and church leadership. Mm-hmm. And he can talk a little more about that as well.
Yeah, since our community is pretty close knit, they usually meet within like local churches. There's I don't even know how many, maybe about 50 local churches here, Portland, Vancouver area, and very
quite a lot
close knit. Yeah. And people, you know, they get together and really if the pastor supports or the pastor says something. Or, you know, he approves something, people are like, okay, this is how it's, you know, very like, again, like close-knit, and they stick to each other. So if we get the pastoral support and have the pastors like speak and actually say it is important, then we see just a huge involvement in the congregation itself. And people are like, okay, the pastor's for this, we're going to do this as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if the local pastor and the pastoral team is kind of like, nah, you know, we're not supposed to be involved in politics, then we see that all throughout the congregation, you know, we don't have that buy-in.
Are you still seeing some resistance from some of the pastors?
Yeah, there is very small. We're pretty impressed of how many engagement we have from the pastors that are for mm-hmm. and that love what we're doing. And they spoke when they, in front of the congregation, they spoke very highly of us. And what we're doing, and they encourage your congregation to sign up, get registered to vote. Maybe I would say maybe like 10% of the community that we came and talked with, they said, no, we're not going to do it. You know, separation of church and state.
Yeah.
Not knowing what that means.
Right, right.
And they're just like,
I've heard people say this before. Yeah.
We don't want any problems. Mm-hmm. You know, as a pastor, I'm not supposed to tell people who to vote for. So about 10% of those people.
Yeah, yeah. But mostly you've gotten a lot of buy-in. Yeah, that's great.
There were a couple people that tried to do the same work that we do right now, mm-hmm. maybe like 10 years ago or. Maybe less. There's actually two individuals that we know that when they tried to do this, pastors were telling them, no, no, no. Everybody's just like, no.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier, involved. Right? When you're talking to Jeff Merkley, it's you know, he tried to do that with sending out letters and nothing, right? So something has definitely changed.
It's incredible. It's like the right time right now.
Yeah.
People are like, we have to do something.
Yeah.
And we're just very encouraged.
Right. Well, I remember like my first ever experience in like politics was really during the like the whole thing on voting on the measure 36.
Yeah.
I remember going out. I know Andre was there too. We didn't know each other, but he was there too. But we were there protesting against for family values, obviously. And that was really the beginning of, I think, our community really even thinking about anything politics.
Yeah.
But it really didn't move from much from there, just talking about it, that this is happening. But it's definitely changed now. Because a lot of us who were part of that movement are grown up now. We have families, kids, and we can actually do something. And then we learned that we can speak up and do make a difference.
It's a free country, right?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. All right. So brag a little bit. Give us all the contact information about how to get a hold of you, the website, Instagram page, social media, all that stuff.
The best way is to just if you go on our website, slavicvote.org, you really can find most of the places where you can find us. We have Instagram, which is Slavic Vote as well. Mm-hmm. Facebook, which is Slavic Vote PNW. Don't confuse with the other one. There's another one. There's actually a group a long time ago, about 10, 15 years ago, started in Seattle.
Oh.
They also called themselves Slavic Vote. And we actually met the guy, and he kind of lost interest, and he was been kind of bummed out, but nothing happened back then.
Yeah.
But there's that, and there's also an account. But if you do a Slavic Vote PNW, you'll find the right one. And then website, if you just go on there, you can register for subscribe for the newsletter, and you can kind of follow our progress that way as well.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, Andrei Georgiev, Dmitry Seschenko, and Lily Zukova, thank you so much for being here and talking about Slavic Vote. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us, Jeff.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for checking out the Behind the Curtain podcast. I want to thank my buddy Brian Futch for providing me the theme song, I Am America, produced by Cass Anawati. Join us next week for another episode of Behind the Curtain with Jeff Reynolds.
Great-grandpa sailed here from across the ocean. Nothing else but his dream for a better life. His folks over there shook their heads at such a crazy notion. But deep down in his heart, he knew he was right. He cleared the way for you and me. You can still hear his spirit sings, I am America. This land is my land, America. I know one day after I'm gone, someone will carry this dream along, and that's what makes this country so strong. There's no price for his country he wouldn't pay. Like so many others, he fought for the cause with great devotion. And just like his daddy, he led the way. Yeah. His stories have faded with his years, but his eyes say it loud. One day My dad handed down the things he was taught, like loving your neighbor and trusting in God. I am American.